I'm Tyreek.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Jim, and this is Topic Lords, the only place on the internet you can hear topics discussed. Tyreek, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Yes, my name is Tyreek. I make video games, one such which is called Catacomb Kids, which I've been working on for a very long time. And by the time you hear this episode, I should have probably released a update very recently in the recent past. So you can go check that out. It has a bunch of cool, fun, new stuff like line of sight for the Fog of War, etc. Big changes.
Very exciting. Line of sight. Did you write the code on that yourself, or did you like pull in a library for the line of sight stuff?
No, I pulled in a library.
Smart move. Smart. And Jeff, would you like to introduce yourself, or do you have anything to plug?
Sure. My name is Jeff Gerstmann. I've been covering video games for pretty much the last 30 years, and I recommend getting off the internet. Just get it all. I'm not going to follow this advice, but I'm plugging unplugging.
Oh yeah. Highly recommended. I've done it for like minutes at a time, and it's great.
That's silly. Wow. I mean, that's tremendous of you, but I'm like looking at TikToks while I'm giving my daughter a bath and stuff like that. I've got my phone in one hand, and it's like, well, I better not drop this in the bathtub. That'd be bad.
Oh my God. I do the same thing. And I got to say, ruining my phone is not my concern with the practice.
Well, how am I supposed to keep looking at the TikToks if the phone is destroyed?
Well, that's an excellent point. I have a serious attention problem around my kid, and I feel like sometimes he just gives up on me.
I've definitely had my son, who is two, grab my phone out of my hand and like set it down or put it in my pocket at times, which is like this ultimate like, oh my God, I'm garbage. I'm a literal garbage dump of a person.
I've been trying to encourage him to do that, but he won't.
That's like a power move.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like, no, it's time to spend time with me now. I'm like, okay, all right, okay. But you have three things that you can say, and you said all three of them. Like, I don't want to talk to you about this episode of Paw Patrol you keep on watching over and over again, and or the weird Ukrainian children that are on YouTube making millions of dollars living in Dubai playing with toys on YouTube. I can't even get into that. That's the topic is too much even for the show. I can't relive that now.
I had an app called YouTube Vanced on my phone, which was past tense, an app that would just play YouTube videos without showing any ads.
Yeah.
I forget what happened. I think they stopped updating for like legal reasons or something like that.
Yeah.
Then it eventually stopped working because YouTube updated their APIs. And when that happened, we just told Winston that YouTube broke. You can't watch YouTube anymore.
That's the smartest thing, because I ended up going further down this rabbit hole. So for me, it was ads. For me, it was we have a Roku hooked up to a TV, and YouTube on a Roku on a TV will really blast some ads at you. And so I was like, well, what am I going to do about this? I mean, I could pay YouTube for it, but for a family account, they want $30 a month, which is more than I am willing to pay for an ad-free experience on a Roku. A pie hole won't fully block it. There's all, you know, but there is an app on the Roku store. I believe it's called Play. I forget what it is called, but someone made an interface for something that's called Invidious, which is like an alternative front end for YouTube that lives on the web. And it's basically they're setting up proxies to bypass the ads and all this other stuff. And it's just straight up on the Roku store. And so suddenly we were kind of back in business, but the search is so bad that it doesn't return all the videos. And then right away, my daughter started using it to watch these incredibly ill-tempered children playing with super expensive things. Like, we went to the Mermaid Cafe in Dubai, and look at how much, like, look at all this money. It's like, I can't pull her away from it because it's all she wants to see. So I had to adopt this, like, you're going to smoke the whole pack mentality. And we watched nothing but that for about 3 weeks. And then one day she was just done with it. She just like it. She went through it, and we had seen the same video too many times or whatever. And it finally broke her of it. But we're getting dangerously close to getting back into it.
That's one way that could have gone.
Yeah. Well, you gotta know your kid when it comes to stuff like that. And I was pretty sure based on some of the other TV shows she's walked away from and quit cold turkey.
Yeah.
After being obsessed with them, I'm like, okay, if we just feed her these kids all day long, eventually she's going to give up. I will say that they did teach her a thing that all these channels do is they all have, whether it's parents or the kids, they are constantly giving thumbs ups and thumbs downs in these videos. Mm-hmm. It's like, look at this toy. And then the girl goes, yay, and does double thumbs up. And so it taught my daughter how to give a good, high quality thumbs up and a thumbs down.
Do they speak?
Yes. And okay. Sometimes it's pitched up. Sometimes it is. And a lot of times it's dubbed, especially as the kids get older and thus like less like appropriate for whatever this thing is.
If they like dub it over to keep them sounding young.
I believe that's the case, but also I think it's so that the English is better.
Right.
The channel's popular enough that I think they dub it into like 12 different languages, but even the English, which is what they're speaking in the original recordings, in some of those cases, they're dubbing over all of the English with non-accented kind of more American sounding English, which is haunting.
Didn't really occur to me that like, you know, these YouTube kids are making a bunch of money and they are rapidly aging out of their target demo.
Yeah. The parents of these kids, as far as I can tell, their solution to it has been, well, we should just have
more kids. Brilliant. Yeah. That's why not? Why not?
We've got the machine built. The pipeline is built already. We just need
it to. It pays for itself.
Yeah. Terrifying.
Are we ready to start on some topics?
Nightmare world. Goodness. Yes. Palate cleanser.
Jeff, your topic is the shame of not remembering any good jokes for kids and having to write jokes for on the spot for impatient children.
Yes. So my daughter is 4 and I don't know where she picked it up, whether it was at school or something, but she has started telling jokes and they are not jokes, with the exception of the knock, knock joke, knock, knock, who's there? Boo, boo hoo. Don't cry, little baby. That is like the one joke that she can get out. But the rest of them are just like, what was it? Why did tonight, as I was putting her to bed, she said, why did the princess not have her dresses? And I said, well, why? And she said, because the cats ate them all. Waka waka. Also, we've been watching Muppet Babies, so she's adopted the Fozzie.
I mean, that's a useful tick. Like, yeah. In case people thought you were being serious, that gotta do something about these cats.
It's the textual, it's the real life equivalent of writing slash S at the end of a post, I think.
You know? That's what I was thinking. Right. I thought the exact same thing.
So that's a joke that she made up.
Yes. I'm pretty sure she made it up on the spot. But then she goes like, tell me a joke. It can either be a knock knock joke or a real joke, which I love the idea that knock knock jokes are not real jokes. I feel ashamed because like, you know, I used to know all sorts of jokes and all this other stuff, but like all that stuff is gone.
You can just recite to her like rap skits.
Yeah, exactly. Just be like, well, let me tell you about the $20 sack pyramid. And so I've had to on the spot just, you know, just try to come up with stuff and have it make sense. And I think the best one I got out tonight, I was like, well, it's got to be like a play on words or something. It's just like, why was the cow frowning? Because it was in a bad mood. Oh, and then I had to when that did not garner immediate laughter, I instinctively went, waka waka. And then she lost it. I'm like, great, okay, as long as I can throw that at the end, I can, any, these jokes could be anything, these could be made up words thrown together, and as long as I say waka waka at the end, she's gonna love it.
It's like
waka waka has become a punctuation mark that denotes joke.
Yeah, basically it's like here's the spot where you laugh, mark,
waka waka. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. There are a couple of ways to approach this. Like one of the things that we do at Winston's bedtime is we will tell him stories about Bouncy the Rat in the Wildwood and her friends. And when I started doing this, I was like going through like story calculus in my head. Like what's the conflict here? You know?
Yeah.
But he doesn't care as long as something happened in the story.
Yeah.
Kids' standards are real low. On the other hand, you are setting the example of like, what is a funny joke?
Yes.
That they learn this from you.
I know. Like I want her to have a good sense of humor, but she's not ready for most of the material that I feel like I would have at this point. And so I'm hoping that this will be an effective stopgap. We'll smoke the whole pack on this waka waka thing and see where it nets out on the other side. But yes, making up stories, she eventually got very particular in what she wanted. She'd be like, tell me a story, but make it up from your head and make it about these princesses and about how I went to visit them and how we made pie and how we, and like, she's basically telling me the story that she wants me to then repeat back to her. Uh-huh.
Oh, this is very familiar.
And if I miss something, she's like, and yeah, well, where's the pie? Oh, okay. Well, okay. Well, she was making the pie. I'm getting to the pie. Thank you.
So you've become ChatGPT to her.
Yeah. Basically.
I just want you to tell me a story about making a pie now. It sounds lovely. I could fall asleep on the show.
Well, it's unfortunately they're all, you know, and it's the other thing is I thought that maybe foolishly that like, oh man, we could, I hope that these kids don't get into all this Disney stuff. No. So all the stories were about, it's like, well, you know, Snow White did this and then Belle was there and then, well, then Ariel was there with her human legs and then they made a pie and Sleeping Beauty did, the, you know, and so it is all these. It is literally the Disney princesses.
This is the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Basically, yeah.
But for making pie.
Yeah. Delicious, delicious pie. And then having to run. I don't remember why, but immediately after the pie is consumed, they have to run away from Sleeping Beauty's house to get to like a store to buy things. And then I believe another pie is often made later in the story. But it's a two-pie story. It's a two-pier.
Going back to the idea of like telling kids jokes and kids telling jokes. I feel like a significant portion of the concept of jokes is like subverting expectations. It's the whole idea of like you set something up and then the punchline is that you subvert the expectation of what you had set up. Like the thing that happens, you didn't. Kids don't have expectations to subvert though. Like, yeah, that's why their jokes don't make any sense is because like anything that you say is going to be like a new and novel fact about the world. And it's like, it's the whole idea of subverting their expectations just doesn't make sense in that context.
Absolutely. And then when I started looking up knock knock jokes, which is if you want to see some SEO driven articles, might I recommend looking up jokes for kids online? It's like it makes recipe pages look concise and to the point by comparison. And you just get to these jokes and you're just like, oh, these literally make no sense. It's just like the word at the start of the knock knock joke is half of another word. And then you finish it and you're like, oh, and now I see why she separates them into knock knock jokes and real jokes.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're on the right track. I think, well, it depends. If she's really insistent that you make it up from your own head, then you're screwed.
But well, she's not going to know with the jokes, at least for a while. So I'm thinking, you know, I'll find some Andrew Dice Clay routines or something.
I do think it's a solid strategy to just get like the 100 laughs joke book from the 50s. Right. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
I forgot about joke books because I was going to suggest you just start eating a bunch of popsicles. Uh-huh. Like they still have the jokes on them, right?
That's good advice anyway. Really?
Yeah. It's fair.
but now I'm thinking like if she thinks that you're actually making these jokes up and then she gets older and then finds your like hidden hoard of popsicle sticks and she'll feel so betrayed.
It's like, oh no, she learned to read. I am undone.
Daddy's deep secret.
We must leave tonight. I'm going out for a milk and a carton of cigarettes. I'll be right back. And he was never seen again. My joke empire undone.
Are we ready for another topic?
Absolutely.
Tariq, your topic is, what's your favorite genre to consume that you have no interest in making or think you'd suck at?
Yeah, this is something that occurs to me every once in a while when I like consume a piece of media, whether it's game or music or comic or whatever. And I'm like, man, I wish I would like to make something like this or I wish I had made this or something. And then I think about it a little longer and I'm like, no, I don't. Like, I feel this way about most puzzle games that I play. Like, I really enjoy A Monster's Expedition. It's like an extremely charming game. And they're like, I was playing through it and I was just like, oh, I want to make something like this. Just something extremely charming and calming and like a little brain teasery and that sort of thing. But like, I don't really... Like I'm kind of enamored with the idea of like having made the thing, but I super don't want to actually make a thing. Like everything I want to make is like very action oriented and like twitchy, jumpy combat stuff. Yeah. I don't know that I would actually be any good at that. And maybe that's why I don't want to do it. I don't know. I'm curious. What is it? Do you guys have some things like that where you're like, oh, this is great, but I have no interest in being a part of the process?
Yeah, that was going to be my question. Like, do you think you wouldn't want to make it because you wouldn't be good at it?
I think that's a big part of it, actually. Yeah. I don't know that my brain has the neural connections to be able to make good puzzles.
Yeah.
I mean, well, does making good puzzles mean you also have to be good at solving puzzles? Are they different skill sets?
I'm not good at either one, so I don't know.
Right.
Huh.
I should have had Alan Hazelden on the show. Yeah. I spent like 15 years of my life trying to make like a Mario 3 style platformer because I wanted like to make a game that made me feel the way those games made me feel. And eventually I realized that like, and this was like long after I had like stopped trying to make it, I figured out why I was having such a hard time. And the reason was that like what I enjoy out of those games, a lot of it is like the looking for secrets and the surprises and the subversions. And you can't surprise yourself with your own game design, with your own level design.
Right. Did you ever take any, I mean, you know, you've surely had opportunities over the years to watch other people play things that you've made.
Yeah.
Did you ever take any enjoyment out of watching them, whether it's like they bash their head against something or they solve it in exactly the way that you had hoped, or is there that vicariousness, does that help with it? That's because it reminded me of, you know, the time I spent making levels in Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I mean, you make it, you know, I made it. I knew where all the stupid stuff was, but sending it to a friend and then being like, all right, Patrick Klepek, play this level, and watching him fall for every stupid thing I put into it and going, ha, fuck you. You know, that was a great time.
Yeah, that stuff's great. And like playtests, I think are one of my favorite things about game development. Like to do a playtest, the way I approach it and the way I think like is the right way to approach it. You, the person running the test, you explain to the person playing that I need you to tell me what you're thinking, ask all the questions that come to mind, basically constantly be talking about what's going on in your head. But know that I can't answer the questions until the end, because the whole point is to figure out like, what are they getting stuck on? You have to wallow in the stuckness. Like, because if you just jump in and explain to them how to play you're not going to be there for all the players who are trying to play the game. The game has to stand on its own. And if you just jump in and explain things to them, you're never going to know just how bad it is.
Yeah. We've had publishers over the years try to like make demands about wanting to sit with a reviewer for the first 8 hours of a game or something like that. And been like, absolutely not. Like, what, unless you're going to do that with every customer who buys your game.
Seems counterproductive. Yeah.
Ubisoft. Like if every Assassin's Creed 1 player was going to get a Ubisoft person standing next to them to be like, no, use the knives in your arms.
God, that sounds so annoying.
It's crazy. Like I've never, you know, never done it, but it's just the even the request always sounded so insane.
Right. Yeah. As a player, that sounds like a nightmare. Just like having somebody over your shoulder, just judging the way you interact with the experience the entire time.
It's really fun. It's something that so you end up in that situation a lot. Like, or I've ended up in that situation a lot, going to events to cover games or something like that. Or like when E3 was a thing and they would do E3 Judges Week and you're sitting down and you're like the first people outside of the studio that have seen a game in detail. And so they're all just like watching and going like, oh, is this going to win an award? But then you'd be like, hey, what did you think of Battleborn? And then being like, I got to go. Good talking to you. And you end up in those sorts of situations a lot where someone has clearly spent like the last year and a half like going crazy making this thing. And then you play it and you're like, I played two matches of this and I hope I don't have to see much more of it, or, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Or rather like, this game is fine, but I can tell you right now it stands no chance in the market, or, you know, something like that. And
I always wonder, like, I have to assume that people know when they're making a bad game.
I always assume so. I always assume that the people closest, that there are people super close to it that maybe can't see that because they've just been living it for so long. But I always assume that, like, and I've definitely gotten feedback from developers after I've written a review of them just going like, yep, yeah, no, you nailed it. We know.
Yeah.
And so there's some that I think are more like realistically, or have more realistic views of their games as they're shipping them out or something. But yeah, it takes all kinds, I guess.
Yeah. But to finish my thought, that act of like asking a friend, hey, do you want to check out this game I made? And it's kind of like a gift exchange where like, you are gifting them the opportunity. They're probably interested in playing your game because they're your friend.
Right.
That's your gift to them. And their gift to you is this like an hour of intimacy of like, what is inside my head? And like you're ostensibly you're doing it because that's how you make video games. And that's true. But it's also like, it also tells you about your friend It's also a way to get closer to them because you're finding out more about what they like, what they are like, and the way they think. And with my last game, like I had basically no ambitions for, you know, finding a mainstream player base for it, but I play tested the shit out of that game because I enjoyed doing it so much.
I guess I never like put it in that framing, but I relate to that specifically with regards to games I make and art that I make, like visual art. Yeah. Like I love showing people art and games that I make. I despise doing that with writing because I do not feel that same way about writing. I enjoy writing. I like I have like an entire like 30 page world building document for Catacomb Kids that I have never shown anybody because it feels like a different sort of thing. It doesn't feel like an equal exchange. Like, you know, it feels like if I was to show someone, it would be like a burden on them. and I don't want to do that to other people, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
What about you, Jeff? What are you bad at?
You know, well, I just to follow on that thought just a little bit. It's been a long time since I've made any music, and lately I've had a real itch to get back to it. But the things that I'm finding inspirational are things that are like currently outside of my skill set from a production standpoint. Like I have made a lot of questionable hip hop over the years, and then some synth, just like some other stuff along the way. But like I'm listening to a bunch of like really thrashy hyper pop or, you know, like whatever else and stuff that I just listen to and go like, you know, if I knew how to play guitar, I have some ideas, but I can't. And so I could always put a synth together and throw it through a guitar simulator and, you know, like approximate all of, you know, you could get there with it. But by the time I've got all that rigged up, like the idea in my head has morphed into something else because of the tools at my disposal. Sure. And it's not really achieving the goal. I said, it's fine. In some cases it's maybe better, but it's not the thing I originally set out to accomplish musically. And so that's sometimes frustrating, but sometimes like also creatively rewarding because you're kind of stumbling into something new. But like, I would say like for me, it's kind of games in general. I think there are a lot of people that have been in the like game journalism side that have gone into game development or in some cases always has had dreams of doing it, which I think is a really dangerous thing. But I like people always have like, what game would you make? And like, I don't know. Like if I have a couple of ideas about like, but like ideas are cheap, right? A couple of silly ideas about things you could do with for a game. The one that I had written down for a while that I was like, this would be genius was, it's dumb. Like what the Batman Arkham games with their detective vision, which has been done to death now. My whole idea was, what if you could only see detective vision if you put on a VR headset? And so it was like you played the game on a screen the whole time and then went like, no, we need to get deeper. And you had to put this stupid thing on and then look around for a while. I was like, that would be neat. I was like, actually, that would be neat like twice. And also, that's not a game. That's a feature in a
separate that's always game. Yeah, that's always the trick. Like you come up with an idea for a feature for an existing game. And to even try it out, first you have to make the game.
Right. Yeah.
I think what comes to mind for you, and this isn't you specifically, this is like the whole like circa 2008 Giant Bomb team, I think could have made like a killer comedy FMV game.
Yeah, that was, that would have been really fun. We talked about it. We talked about that specifically a couple of times. Like basically like once you get a green screen and you have like full-time access to it, you eventually say, what if we made an FMV game? And then right after that is we should capture sprites of ourselves in fighting poses and release it for people to put into Mugen because we're not smart enough to actually do that. But we ended up doing none of those things. We did, one of the game of the year things we did was basically like heavily inspired. I think that got it out of our system for the most part was we got to just shoot in a bunch of different silly ass styles.
Yeah,
that were, you know, kind of inspired by FMV games and got it out of the system. But yeah, I you're right. That would have been fun to do. But at the same time, FMV games are terrible. So it's like, well, that thing of like, well, okay, are we going to make a terrible game on purpose? And it's funny, but like,
You can make an entire career out of doing bad art, but like, it's bad on purpose because it's funny.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
And you just have to live with yourself.
Right. And whatever, I think that's totally viable, but I think, I don't know. The thing I always thought is if I ever had, and I have less free time than ever nowadays, but it was always this idea, if I ever was going to go pick up, I don't know, Game Maker, you know, just like go grab an engine and try to figure something out. The thing I would always sit down and try to do would be like, let's make a dual joystick shooter. Mm-hmm. You know, because there aren't enough of those, but like not to, because like, oh, I need to put this out or anything, but just to be like, if could I possibly ever learn to use these tools well enough to make something that is, make a Smash TV like, make a Robotron like, yeah. Robotron light like
yeah,
Chicago that, definition of Robotron.
Yeah, I mean, the twin stick shooter is a super approachable genre in terms of like, there's a guy on the Topic Lures Discord who decided to learn Pico 8, and I think he also had just extremely minimal programming knowledge, and he spun that up into a like a single screen arcade action game. It's pretty fun. In about a month of his free time. And like twin stick shooter, like extremely approachable in terms of like, it's fun right away. You don't have to tune it really carefully. You don't have to do a bunch of level design. It's just fun right away.
Yeah. That was always my thought of just like, this is, you know, if I could make a character move and make a character shoot and then put enemies in there that blow up when they are shot, like that would be enough.
Yeah,
that was one of my earliest Game Maker projects was I didn't have a controller, so it was like, you know, just WASD and mouse.
Yeah,
but it was basically a Geometry Wars clone, and I was like, this is great. This is yeah. like proof that I can make it. And then yeah. you know that yep. was I still remember, I like remember that game fondly. It was fun.
Do you think that's why there's been like, I mean, it's a little less so these days, but it felt like we went through a real, like there was a glut of those games coming out kind of post Geometry Wars. And
I do think that, yes. I think what happened was when developers are like trying to figure out what they're going to make next, they do a bunch of prototypes and then they pick the one that's most fun. And the one that's most fun is always the twin stick shooter, because it's the easiest to make fun in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
And I think like the only thing that is stopping that from happening again is people looking at the market and saying, okay, this is saturated.
Right. Or they're instead saying like, well, we need to take one stick out because Vampire Survivors is so huge, but then we have to build an algorithm that dictates what gets shot when, and I'm not smart enough for any of that. And oh man.
And that's another game that like, if I think that one requires a lot more care and tuning, but if you know what you're doing, or if you're just cloning an existing design outright, like you can make those pretty quickly, especially like I saw one that looked like there was a team that was making like a Diablo-like an action RPG.
Yeah.
With these assets, we could turn out a Vampire Survivors clone in a weekend. And they did. Like that was my read on that.
Is that Halls of Torment? Is that the one?
Let me see if that looks familiar.
Because that one I think even has health globes, like full on Diablo looking UI.
That looks extremely like what I was thinking of. Yeah.
It's pretty good.
That's great.
It's like it's a pretty good one of those.
Yeah.
As those go.
I was gonna quickly go back to the idea of like music genres and stuff, because I also feel that way about a lot of types of music. Like I really enjoy making music, especially like singing and that sort of thing. And then like every once in a while I'll be like, oh man, that would be a really cool like metal lyric.
Yeah.
But never on earth could I do a metal thing. I've made a few efforts and it's always bad. Like, I don't know why, but whenever I make any musical thing, it like immediately just veers into like some bluesy kind of territory and I can't control it. It's just what my brain hears and wants to make.
It all depends on the genre. I knew a guy in high school who had a metal band, and the way he did the vocals was just by whispering into a distortion pedal. And it came out sounding like a throat ripping scream.
Oh,
it's a good trick.
Hmm. Okay. I might steal that, but I still don't think I'd be able to do the instrumentation justice.
Oh, sure. Well,
yeah. I think the last project I was, you know, making multiple songs for, it was definitely just like, let's download every single bootleg VST we can find and see what it does. And so yes. Every song was just, what's this one do? Ooh, this sounds good.
Yeah.
And I realized why so many Beastie Boys tracks at some point, like for some period of their career, had all that distortion and all that other shit on it. Because at some point you're just like, what I'm saying is the dumbest thing ever, but like we put it through enough effects that it sounds cool as fuck. And the number of songs that got saved by virtue of just like, okay, we're going to lower this to a whisper. We're going to put it through three different guitar simulators. and then put some reverb on top. Exactly. It's just like, it's just, here's a vibe of some potential lyrics. And I would get people that would, you know, the people, not that that many people were listening to it, but like some people would occasionally write and say like, hey, what are you saying here? And I would just never respond. It's like, no, just whatever you've got in your head is better than I'm not going to ruin the magic for you on that.
I don't listen to new music anymore, unfortunately. But back when I did, one of my favorite kinds of music to listen to was like a guy who got a new VST and was fucking around with it for an afternoon. And that's, you know, that's the result.
That's basically what it was. It was every Sunday, me and my roommate would wake up extremely hungover and go, all right, let's write a song. And sometimes that would take 90 minutes and sometimes it was like 4 hours, but it was just like, let's fuck around with this until we are bored and then it's done.
Yeah, good times.
And then I got super self-conscious about it and started writing lyrics that were about things that were actually happening in my life. And then I got scared to release anything. It was just like, oh, I ruined it. I ruined it. I care too much now.
Oh, I mean, I'm a big proponent of like making art and never showing it to anybody.
Yeah.
Just make that twin stick shooter and keep it to yourself. Like, just, I did this. I'm happy that I did it. It's just for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very valid.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah. Let's do it.
My topic is High Sidon. So back when I was running the Tuesday co-working event at the Maid, one day this 15-year-old kid showed up and he showed us a game that he'd made in Unity with a team. It seemed like it was like a charity funded game camp for like disenfranchised kids in Oakland.
That's what Gameheads is. Yeah. Gameheads is I'm not entirely sure how to describe it, but it is like a local Oakland sort of like, hey, let's like get all these disadvantaged youth together and make some games and like provide them with like tutors and mentors and that sort of thing.
That's awesome. Yeah. Love it. And he showed us this game he had made called High Sidon. I'm going to read from the YouTube description here. High Sidon is a 1v1 drifting co-op game where players rack up points, swinging their cars in an arena called The Ring, while onlookers get hyphy. And the premise is, what if sideshows became a competitive sport?
Yeah. I mean, as if they're not already.
Right. That's what I was. Yeah.
tell me more about this, because my understanding of sideshows is extremely limited.
Well, if you go and listen to the classic 415 track Sideshow from, I believe, 1989, 1990, back when Oakland was still in the 415 area code.
Is this the trope namer, or was there a phenomenon that existed already?
I believe the phenomenon existed as a precursor to that. But, you know, it's you need your vehicle to be, you know, it should be clean, but also you should be ready to show and prove at the sideshow.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know that there are hard and fast rules per se. And today's sideshows.
So sideshows like out of control. This is a Bay Area thing, right? I don't think it happens elsewhere in the world. Am I wrong about that? Like, this is a thing where like people will like block off an intersection or even like the freeway and just start doing like localized car stunts, like ghost riding the whip.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doing donuts and turning tight ones, if you will.
Yeah. And for the audience of people that they are preventing from getting home from work.
I've never been stopped by a sideshow, but I feel like I would be very happy about that. I've been stopped in San Francisco. when I was in San Francisco and driving home, I got stopped for a lot of really crazy stuff over the years, but it was never a sideshow. And so I was always very unhappy.
I would be happy the first time.
Okay. Yeah. Because if it was suddenly a weekly event or something, you're like, maybe I got to drive. Maybe I got to take a different route or something. This is maybe a bit much.
That reminds me of like the first time I ever like saw somebody busking on BART. And I was oh, wow. Entertainment. How novel.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, just let me be in silence. It's so loud in here.
I had a friend who was very into car audio. And so he was constantly building his own speaker boxes and, you know, like all of that kind of car culture adjacent stuff that was, you know, sort of fit into some of that sideshow culture of just like, okay, we're going to open up the trunk and there's going to be 2 15-inch subs back here and all this neon and all this, you know, something that you can pop open and then, you know, spin Brody's in an intersection while people look at your speakers. And between that and my parents, I grew up around auto repair. So kind of like that kind of car stuff. Like I have a real love for the idea of rogue car event. It elicit car stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Does it make it less fun if it's in an arena?
I think putting it in an arena is as if we watch the trailer for High Side, and you know, I think that's a little less. It's a little less hyphy, I have to say, to have it as part of an organized sort of sport. We did back when I was at GameSpot, we did an event, a live event called Game, the Games and Music Experience. And it was largely this retailer, like they wanted publishers to pay to show games to attendees. And then Best Buy had a booth where they could say, this TV is good. And my one contribution to the event in the planning stages was we should have a lowrider in there so people can come in and they can hit the switches and make the car hop.
Oh, damn.
Because I've always wanted to do that, and I've never been able to, I since have, but I've never been able to do this, and damn it, if I went to an event and they said, do you want to hit these 16 switches and make the car? I'd be like, absolutely, yes, I will wait in line for this. And no one, the marketing team and all the people were like, I don't know what this is, this car hop. And by the time it got filtered through whatever, it was just a guy in a lowrider completely cordoned off in some empty section of the Moscone Center. And then like once an hour, he would get in it and make it hop for like a couple of minutes and then get out and then be like, I don't know, they're paying me for this.
And they had the entirely wrong number of switches.
Yeah, well, they weren't letting anyone get in and do it. You couldn't right. even sit in the car while he did it because, you know, obviously safety concerns or whatever it was.
Of course, yeah.
My other idea was put me in a fireproof suit and set me on fire a couple of times. And they did not go for that either. Instead, they wanted to save on the amount of money they were spending on the event. And so they asked me if my band would play. And I was like, yeah, I guess.
Do you know what you're in for?
Yeah, I was like, this is not, you don't want it. All right. I think High Side, and I would like this trailer a lot more if the arena was an intersection, if it kept the lawlessness of it. I think that would be, and maybe that's a progression. Maybe you level up. Maybe this is a far-flung future where there is licensed real sideshows, but everyone still starts on the street. And so you gotta, you know, much like a wrestling game starts you out wrestling in someone's backyard, and by the end of the career you're main eventing some big thing. You know, start me out on some intersection in Oakland somewhere, and then have me finish in this crazy ring of death, presumably also in Oakland somewhere.
Yeah. The other thing that I noted about this, and in fact I feel like I must have seen some other trailer or something, because I remember believing, maybe the guy just told me this, that the game had a soundtrack with like Too Short and Boots Riley on it. Mm. And those guys both still live in Oakland, right? Like I would be not at all surprised if like you, if like a 15-year-old black kid like went up and knocked on their door. It was like, hey, we're making this video game. Can we use your tracks? He would just let them.
Yeah. I know Too Short moved to Atlanta for a while. I don't know where he's based.
Oh, I did not know that.
So but he may have moved by that. The trailer that you sent does have Mac Dre in it. So, so I don't know if that's part of the official game or if that's just aspirational.
Right.
The other thing that kind of stood out to me, just like looking at this, is like, it's such a culturally hyper-specific thing that I feel like doesn't usually get interpreted in a lot of media. Especially games and that sort of thing, you know, where it's like, I feel like this is the kind of thing that could have only been made by an individual in the area at the time and that sort of thing, you know,
like yeah. Like if this kid had come up and shown me his first person shooter, I would have forgotten immediately.
Yeah, of course. Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's interesting to think about like how many of these types of hyper-specific cultural artifacts people live through that just aren't sort of ever given light to outsiders in the way that this particular kid made this game to be consumed by some audience, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I feel like this making this game was in some way a political act.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's kind of probably an inherently more authentic than, because I'm trying to think about the other attempts we've had at any kind of like this type of car culture. There was a lowrider video game that I think was on PlayStation 2, and then it may have been PS2 and 360, but there was a Pimp My Ride game based on the hit television show. and those are abysmal experiences. The Lowrider game is better than Pimp My Ride, but not by much. And so the idea of just like, no, these are, you know, made by people that have actually been in and around that culture, I think is way more interesting than, you know, yeah, we farmed out this Pimp My Ride game to some studio in Montana, you know, whoever, I don't know who made it, but,
right.
But there was just like, I don't know, something about the idea of someone walking into the maid with this is kind of automatically cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Corporatization sort of inherent in the necessity of making a larger product would diminish it.
You just have to get Hideo Kojima to do it.
Right. Yeah. the actual story here is this is the prototype build of PhysInt right here. This is what he's making for the PlayStation 6.
Okay. All right.
Where he's returning to stealth action. There will be a cardboard box you can get into in between levels, but the rest of it is all this.
I'd play that.
Yeah. I remember someone who had seen Metal Gear Solid Ground Zeroes before it had been announced describing it to me. And this person said like, yeah, it's got stealth, but like it's open, but it's got stealth. And also it's got car stealth. So like you could be in a car and then drive that around a corner and hide. And like, I don't know. And they were baffled by the demo. But also like enamored with it in some ways as well. And so, you know, this fits right in with that. If this car could hide around a corner, if we could put a cardboard box over one of these cars and then also have it continue to drift, I think we're onto something.
Just DLC hats on the cars. Yeah, one of them's a cardboard box.
Yeah. Don't worry. This whole thing will be, this whole mode will be inside of Fortnite 6 months from now, I think.
I tell you, I miss Rock Band, but I don't know if I miss Rock Band enough to play Fortnite.
Yeah.
Is that released? Is that out? Is playable?
Yeah, it's out. Yeah, it's out and playable. So it doesn't have instrument support currently, but PDP just announced a new run. Like they're literally making new guitars.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
You'll find videos of people using real Rock Band hardware to play Fortnite Festival. But it doesn't require you to hit the strum bar. So they're just hitting the frets.
Oh, that's weird.
And you're watching them do it and going, why are you doing this? Like, what are you trying to prove? Like, you're not playing, you know, you don't have to play it right. This is stupid. Like, you look like a moron. Stop doing this. But they are, Harmonix is apparently working on adding like proper instrument support to it.
Are you going to be able to play normal Fortnite with a guitar then?
My hope is yes. Well, I guess no. Well, so when you play the music inside of Fortnite, I don't think the note highway pops up. I'm not sure that you have to play it. I think it's just a taunt and the music just plays. So like if you go and buy Buddy Holly, then when you hit the button in Fortnite to taunt, the character whips out a guitar and then Buddy Holly is played. But I'm not sure that you actually have to physically play it. I think that would be, to me, that would be the optimal like height of like, let's make this as ridiculous as possible, is if you had to play Fortnite with the guitar strapped around your neck and then switch like to taunt. If you just like initiate taunts by starting to play the notes on the guitar, I think that would be, it'd be like the Helldivers 2 stratagems, but instead of memorizing D-pad inputs to call in airstrikes, you just have to memorize that little bit of Buddy Holly and it plays the rest for you or something. That's what I would do.
I might get that guitar though. Like, I never played Rock Band 4. I just got an Xbox Series S. I could get that guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, the Rock Band 4 instruments are like $500 now. So
yeah, so it's cool that PDP is going to do a new run of instruments, if only for that reason. You know, the instrument supply has gotten pretty ridiculous out there.
Are we ready for another topic?
Yeah.
For this topic, we're going to be reading the poem Poetry by Marianne Moore. Who would like to read this poem?
I guess I'll read it since I suggested it.
Okay. Cool.
Poetry by Marianne Moore.
Oh, please don't do that.
I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Reading it, however, with a perfect contempt for it, one discovers that there is in it, after all, a place for the genuine. Hands that can grasp, eyes that can dilate, hair that can rise if it must. These things are important not because a high-sounding interpretation can be put upon them, but because they are useful. When they become so derivatives as to become unintelligible, the same thing may be said for all of us, that we do not admire what we cannot understand. The bat, holding on upside down or in quest of something to eat. Elephants pushing. A wild horse taking a roll. a tireless wolf under a tree, the immovable critic twinkling his skin like a horse that feels a flea, the baseball fan, the statistician. Case after case could be cited, did one wish for it. Nor is it valid to discriminate against business documents and school books. All these phenomena are important. One must make a distinction, however. When dragged into prominence by half-poets, the result is not poetry, nor till the autocrats among us can be literalists of the imagination. Above insolence and triviality, and can present for inspection imaginary gardens with real toads in them, shall we have it? In the meantime, if you demand, on the one hand, in defiance of their opinion, the raw material of poetry in all its rawness, and that which is, on the other hand, genuine, then you are interested in poetry.
This poem, more than almost any other poem we've done, sounds like prose. Like, yes. you just read it as a little essay. But one thing it has in common with a lot of poetry is that I have no fucking idea what it means. it reads like it should have like an obvious on its face meaning, but I could not get any mental traction on it.
I think it's as per the title, I think it's about poetry.
Right. Well, I got that far.
Okay, wait a minute.
The I too dislike it is like, people don't like poetry, I feel like, is right. A common attitude right. That people have. I too dislike it. There are things that are important beyond all this fiddle. Like, poetry doesn't matter. There are more important things.
I got that far too. So like, five words in, I'm good.
but even with all the sort of aspects of extraneousness, I guess that poetry tends to have, it still has importance and meaning, because everything has importance and meaning.
Right.
Is what I was reading from.
Yeah. And I have to wonder, like, you know, I started doing this segment because I wanted to understand poetry better. And I really feel like I've completely failed. It's been like a year and a half, and still, like, my mind is just a perfect blank. And I have to wonder, like, what if we took out all the line breaks and it was just prose?
I think it would be easier to understand. I also feel like I kind of flubbed the cadence on it at a certain point because of the line breaks.
Yeah.
I'd say parts of it sounded like, I mean, you know, it had, and maybe it's because of your reading of it, but it had this diss track vibe to it of, yeah, man, fuck poetry. I mean, yeah, you know, maybe you're interested in, yeah, if you like all this bullshit, you know, the raw, yeah, if you, but then the admission at the end of like, yeah, if you want it real, if you want it real raw, then I guess you like poetry.
Yeah.
Maybe if at the end we just added the word dumbass, maybe if we like poetry, dumbass. Good going, stupid. You accidentally got into poetry. Now you're in for it.
You accidentally got into poetry.
I heard a poem I liked. Uh-oh. What now?
Oh, man. This is, I've been trying so hard to get into poetry, and some people just fucking fall backwards into it. It's very frustrating.
Someday you're going to find the one for you.
Yeah.
And then it's going to be all downhill from there.
Published in 1919. That's how far behind the times I am.
You had a lot of catching up to do. They're still writing poems, I think, out there.
Ugh. Yeah, I was just noting her birth dates or birth death dates, 1887 to 1972. Like, that's such a long span of time. Maybe any span of time seems long once it like crosses a century.
It spans, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but
I mean, I was born last millennium.
Yeah, I guess I was too.
Yeah. I was born 3 years after this lady passed away.
Never met her. Never got a chance.
Yeah.
I'm doing math bad. If I live until 2075, I will be as old as her.
That seems
people will be like, holy crap, he was born in the 1900s.
Yeah. That's all we got, huh?
Well, I was trying to find one last thought.
Yeah.
I always felt that poetry should rhyme. I know that's pedestrian of me, but in elementary school, they had us write they do that thing. I'm like, okay, well, we're going to study poetry for, you know, the next 6 weeks or whatever it was. And everything I wrote, I was just like, no, these have to rhyme. These have to rhyme. It was before I had gotten into hip hop. It was before hip hop had kind of happened to me, but there was still something about it where it was just like, no, this doesn't rhyme. Then what are we even doing? If we don't rhyme, then you're just writing shit. Who cares?
This was your idea. This was your constraint that you were placing on yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. So when they did the class, like everyone in the class is going to write some poems or whatever. I'm like, all right, bars.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is I like the line, nor is it valid to discriminate against business documents and school books. All these phenomena are important. I just like the idea of putting poetry in the same class as those things with regards to like importance to human civilization and the functioning of things. It's like, you know, we have school books, business documents, poems. All of these things are necessary, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's a good joke. Like, why didn't I get that joke while you were reading it? Like, I don't know. I think I was just trying to understand the previous sentence while I was listening to this one.
Well, I could go in here and I could just write waka waka at the end of that. And if that, maybe that would help.
That should be we should put this on genius.com and add that annotation. Are we ready for another topic?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Tariq, your topic is every mammal has a fish.
Yeah. I noticed this a while ago, and it's not strictly true, but it feels true enough to be worth mentioning that it seems like every terrestrial mammal, or I guess even non-terrestrial mammals, has like a fish version of it, where whenever somebody discovered a new fish, they just were like, what's an animal I know from the land? And yeah. I'll name it that plus fish. So there's there's dogfish. Of course, there's catfish, there's lionfish, there's tiger sharks. Where'd my phone go? I had a list. There's mongoose lurch, mongoose loach. There's seahorses, horsefishes, batfishes. That, like, I don't know. It's just something I noticed. And it's like, I spent like an hour Googling just various animal names followed by the word fish. And I want to say like 8 times out of 10, there was a hit for some kind of fish named after a mammal. Not many birds. Most of the time I tried looking for like a bird fish, it was just like that bird eating a fish. So
sure.
Yeah. Do you think that the people that were responsible for naming fish were just secret like landlubbers? Like they really hated fish, but they loved, like, I just love cats and dogs and horses are cool too. These fish or whatever. Write what you know that they say. This one looks like a horse to me. It's a horse fish.
You would think that the people discovering fish would be into they'd be in the ocean.
Yeah, I would think so. But apparently not, because they were too busy going like,
maybe it was all the people that brought the fish back to land for the land people to eat, because the fishermen were too busy fishing to name the fish. And so they brought it back to the land people to sell them the fish to eat and do what land people do to fish. And the land people were the ones that got the right to name them.
Then. We got to name this stuff such that people who are used to eating mammals, they know what to expect.
Ah, give me that horse fish.
Yeah.
I like the idea that they're named after what they taste like instead of what they look like.
Yeah. I think that's what they should have done.
Yeah.
That would just make a lot more sense. Yeah. I would probably try more fish. I'd probably enjoy seafood more if they could find me. Like, you got one of them prime rib sharks? We get one of those around here?
Now you got me thinking about like fish ribs in the same way that like pork ribs and exist.
It's not a lot of meat on those bones.
And also they're like mostly cartilaginous, right?
Yeah. Like a lot of fish, I think, don't even have bones. They just have cartilage.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It's not doesn't have the same structural integrity. I don't think it would be the same eating experience. What bone? What fish has the thickest bones?
This is
finally the real questions must be answered. Thickest boned fish. Which fish have thick bones? Northern pike, pickerel, carp, herring, squawfish, moon eye, buffalo fish.
Buffalo fish. There we go.
Yeah. Can we get some buffalo fish wings? Can we set that
buffalo
up?
Buffalo fish sauce. Yeah.
Yeah. Heaviest bone fish, according to these drop downs on Google that are never wrong. Giant sunfish, Mola alexandrini.
I don't like them. Probably my least favorite type.
The sunfish?
Yeah, probably my least favorite type of fish to look at.
Yeah, my sister has a serious sunfish phobia.
They're too big and they're shaped like the letter D. And I feel like either of those alone is bad enough, but the combination of them, and also usually when you see them, they have just big bites taken out of them because they're bad at being fish. And so things just eat them, but right. like they just keep puttering along. I don't know.
They just look like creepy enemies in an R-type game.
Yeah. 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 Sometimes you see a real life actual animal that exists and you think this should be in a video game.
You know, you make video games.
Me? Yeah, I do.
Do you have any water levels in Catacomb Kids?
Yeah. Giant fish enemies.
Oh, I guess the next environment that I'm working on kind of has a bit of a water theme. I could put some giant D's in it.
Finally, I've been saying this, video games need more giant D's.
I thought you were going to say that you didn't like the drop down thing that Google says that's never wrong.
Oh, no, I love that. No. I can't remember what it was. I was looking at that one like recently, just the other day, and like there was some wild nonsense in there of just yeah. like, why is this what people are asking, or is this what it thinks people want to be asking? Like, I
yeah.
don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They will, you know, you try asking Google, where is the furthest Denny's? Mm. And they will give you the closest Denny's. They'll be like, oh, well, I know what you actually want. And dude, like, if you're going to fucking rewrite my entire intent, like, guess what I'm searching for to begin with? Don't even have the prompt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm staring at one right here that just says, and it's not related to the query at all. Just says, is Beyonce and Nicki Minaj friends?
Yeah. That kind of stuff where it's like, it's not even proper grammar. Yeah. It's not even grammatically yeah. correct.
Who is Beyonce's best friend? It says Kelly Rowland here. I'd buy that.
Is that true? Who knows?
It's believable. I don't, according to today.com, which used the term bestie, which is what I assume that Google is keying off of here. They're like, well, the term bestie wouldn't be used unless they were actually best friends. I mean, the words mean something, right? Come on.
If you can have a bestie, can you have a worstie? Is that your worst friend or your worst enemy?
Mm.
Or your best enemy?
Yeah. Best enemy is more like a rival at that point.
I guess so, yeah.
Just search for worstie. There's an Urban Dictionary result is the top result, which means this is not a real word.
Honestly, I trust Urban Dictionary more than Google at this point.
Yeah.
Yes, but there would be people using the word results. There's also like at least one band named Worstie. Not a bad name for a band.
No. Could be a candy, like a bratwurst flavored sure. yeah. hard candy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Finally, some nice sweet bratwurst. Grandma's got a whole bowl of them. She's got a whole dish by the phone.
It would probably go pretty well with salty licorice, actually.
Oh, God. I had some more of that recently.
Yeah? On purpose?
Yeah. Yeah. Someone sent some my way all these years later.
And you can't help but eat things people send you.
Well, you know, they took the time out of their day to send it to me. And I'm like, you know, is this?
I mean, that's a good point.
Is this salt on the licorice or anthrax? Who can say? I've got to find out one way or the other. And yeah, that opening the door to having people send energy drinks that I then taste and rank on live streams has resulted in some scary moments, both from a flavor perspective and one legit like, this is too strong and I'm in trouble now. And it's 10 a.m. and I'm wired, man.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
I got to go clean the bathroom with a toothbrush to get this out of my system. This is real take apart a clock radio and never put it back together type stuff. Just real scary.
I sent you an ask about this on co-host, but now I get to ask you in person. How do you keep 200 drink flavors in your head at once?
It's really about keeping some of the key standout flavors that are across the list. And so you kind of have these bands of, you know, roughly where these drinks lie on a flavor and taste perspective. And you know that all of them are either, I do distinctly remember the ones that are underpowered, not from a feel perspective, but from a, like, I know in my head, this only has 160 milligrams of caffeine. It's yeah. child's play and those sorts of things. And so I'm good enough at remembering enough of them to make the list work, but there's definitely like a couple that I have to like stare at for a while and be like, that was the one that was like this. And
like, if you really wanted to do a proper sort, you would ideally have like some sipping, like here's one that's just ready to go take yeah. a sip so I can compare it. And you do that, you know, 200 times
yeah.
for,
Definitely. And be like, well, no, it's definitely not. Have them all in their ranked order and just yeah. walk down the line and yeah. be like, oh God, I would be dead by the end of that.
Well, I know that this is a thing that you do, but I haven't actually seen any of these reviews. But is it like a Scoville type thing, or are you kind of making that?
It's all feel.
He's putting them in an order.
I'm just putting them in ranked order and okay. you know, it's not ranked by strength of the caffeine.
It's flavor profile. It's
flavor as well. Like it ends up being both. I think if you have one that is like underpowered but tastes good, like that might as well just be a Diet Coke at that point or something.
See,
you know?
I see. Okay.
And that's got its place, but you know, we're drinking them for a reason.
It does feel like a Scoville style ranking or rating system would be handy. Mm-hmm. Like given what you just said about like some that feel underpowered and one that made you feel scared. Like I feel like that yeah. one should be like at the top of whatever the unit of measurement for energy is.
I actually have that one at the very bottom with a warning on it.
Okay.
Like the like that is like a separate list of just like dog don't mess with this one. And I someone sent me three bottles of it and I didn't finish the one that I had. I poured the other ones out.
Goodness.
Because they were like,
can't even have them in the house.
Yeah, that's a threat. That's a threat
yeah,
at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it was terrifying. But the in terms of Scoville ranking, like all of the high powered drinks all fall in the 300 milligram and you have okay. a couple that'll push into 400 and you'll have some that put other weird stuff in there. There was a specific type of C4, which is a brand of drink where it was called Smart.
Thank
Energy.
You for the clarification.
but it was like, and it was a sub brand called Smart Energy. And there's something in there that when I first started drinking them worked really well. But after, you know, having a case of them 4 days later of drinking one per day, the feeling is gone. It ain't hitting like it used to. Mm-hmm. But also the first handful of them made my scalp tingle, made me feel a little itchy and, you know, like real sketchy kind of feelings to it. But then that all went away, too. And I've been chasing that feeling ever since.
That does sound like it's the kind of drug that changes your body chemistry, at least temporarily.
Yeah, probably. It's probably not good. And I'm probably, I see a doctor on a fairly regular basis. And also, you know, when we take
your doctor told you to stop.
She didn't say like, this is great. Keep doing it. But you know, my blood pressure was in a lot, you know, like all of the numbers yeah. are in a specific zone okay. to where it doesn't, you know, seem like something that's like actively dangerous or,
okay,
that's or something good to that least. Effect. And I, at this point, I'm drinking one a day and I don't really drink much other caffeine throughout the day, except for like maybe with dinner, I'll have like a Diet Coke or something like that. So it's in my 20s or something, when Red Bull first hit the scene, and you didn't know what any of it really was. You're like, well, we're drinking three a day. I had a friend who was a trucker, like a short haul trucker. He was like delivering beer to bars or delivering frozen food to restaurants and that sort of stuff. And that dude and still to this day, this is 30 years later. If I run into that dude, he's got at least three Red Bulls on him, like in pants pockets and stuff. Like he's just got Red Bulls coming out of places that people don't have. You know, he's just like in his inner jacket pocket. He's like, hey, what's up, man?
And bros icing bros situation.
He's like icing himself. Like he's not offering them to me. He's like,
but he's ready. If someone tries to ice him with a Red Bull.
Yeah. He's ready to ice to reverse ice, except he would never give them up because he's there to drink them.
Right.
And I ain't living like that.
A bandolier full of Red Bull.
Yeah.
Really forgot what the topic was.
Energy drinks, oh, right. I guess.
Every mammal has has an energy drink.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Swedish fish flavored ghost is a pretty good energy drink.
I don't drink energy drinks, but I'd love Swedish fish.
Well, there's a Warheads flavored Four Loko. Four Loko is no longer an energy drink, but it is 13.9% alcohol.
You know what you could do? There's a spinoff segment you could do with all the different flavors of Oreos.
Unfortunately, Greg Miller already tackled all of that. So, I'm not even kidding.
have you tried the Swedish fish Oreos?
Yes, they're pretty good.
They're not bad.
Yeah. My wife will occasionally just come home from the grocery store with some random Oreo flavor that she saw that she's like, well, we needed to try these. And
it's science.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's your duty.
Yes.
Yes.
We are honor bound to try these Oreos.
I promised my Kickstarter backers I would eat all the Oreo flavors. The Swedish Fish Oreos specifically, they nailed the smell, but the flavor was pretty generic.
Mm.
That was my take on that. So, Tyreek, you don't need to actually track it. I bet they don't even make it anymore. You have to get on eBay.
Mm. Yeah, those limited flavors.
Now, if they had Swedish Fish Kit Kats, they got so many flavored Kit Kats.
Mm.
I bet. Japan only Kit Kats.
Yeah. The sweetest plum.
My roommate went to a trip to Japan. Well, I don't have a roommate anymore, but before I moved, my roommate went on a trip to Japan and brought back a bunch of like exclusive Japanese flavored Kit Kats. And I'm a little bit of a Kit Kat fiend. So whenever they're around, I tend to just kind of eat them, you know? But I knew that these were like, you know, he'd like traveled and got these. I don't remember what flavor they were, but I ate a couple. But I made sure to like leave one, like one little, you know, they were like the little individually wrapped packages. And so I like left one in the bag and he was pretty upset.
Yeah. You know, this is, I brought home this Monet. It's a one of a kind painting. And my roommate just like, he's a Monet fiend.
He couldn't help himself.
This is why it's good that I live alone now.
Yeah. Any Monets that show up in the building, it's your fault.
Yeah.
And you know what you got yourself into.
Yeah. Mm. Whenever 8-4 would come into town for GDC, they would stop by for a podcast or something. And oftentimes Mark or John would have a bunch of cool Kit Kats to deliver with them. And be like, hey, brought some Kit Kats. Great. And they would be gone by the end of the day. Like they just would have sat on my desk. And I'm not a huge chocolate guy, but Kit Kats, Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. I have no limit. I'm the master P of devouring Kit Kats and Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. So like if you don't take them away from me, I will ensure they're all gone.
Yeah. I just have to be very careful about when I buy snacks now, because they don't like, if, no matter how many I get, they're usually gone by the end of the day, or, you know, they'll last like maybe a couple days if I get enough.
Yeah.
And then I'll be like, cool, I haven't eaten a real meal in the past 2 days because I've just been eating, entire bags of snacks, and this isn't
that
good.
Bad. Is that
So here's what I do. Although it's harder when you live with other people, and I recommend it, only buy snacks that you just kind of like, and then you'll eat a few and be like, okay, I've eaten my snacks. It was okay.
Yeah,
it's not a bad idea. Yeah,
my problem is my wife brings the snacks into the house. And then she is like the queen of just like bites and sips. She's like, I bought this weird flavor of this thing. And then I had two of them and decided I didn't want to see them ever again. And I'm like, well, that cost money. So I'd better, it could be anthrax and I don't care. Just as long as we're getting the money's, our money's worth out of these, then that's fine.
Yeah. My wife and I have a similar relationship, except that like, she actually did intend to finish the snacks a month later. And she's like, where did my chocolate go?
I smoked those.
That's similar to, I think my ex-roommate's relationships is he would like have snacks and stuff. And I'd be like, it's been sitting there for like 5 weeks and it's still there. I don't want it to go bad. And so, yeah. and then inevitably 2 days after I ate the thing that had been there for a month and a half, he'd be like, where'd my thing go? And I'm like, I'll get you another one.
Listen, I had a moral obligation to eat the snack before it went bad.
Yeah.
I will do that much shorter term to my kids, where like I eat a lot of their leftovers or something, where it's like, oh, we made soup and they barely had any, or here, look at all this macaroni and cheese. And now I'm duty bound to eat the rest of this until I have to lay down. But invariably, if you know, it'll be something where I'll let it sit for a while in case they come back to it and then be like, all right, they're done with this. And then I will just devour whatever it is. And then my daughter will come back and like, where'd my sandwich go? Oh shit!
This somehow feels like an inversion of the marshmallow experiment.
Well, this sort of thing is why the marshmallow experiment has the results it does.
Yeah. Now I'm sitting here thinking, like, could I pass the marshmallow experiment right now?
I mean, I think the interpretation of the marshmallow test, like they always lean on the willpower aspect of it, but like sometimes you just want one marshmallow right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't like marshmallows that much. So that at most I would want one marshmallow.
There you go. nobody asked the kids, do you actually want to?
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Like, no, marshmallows are kind of gross. I'll have one, and I ain't crazy.
And that's all the time we have for Topic Lords. Tyreek, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I am on Blue Sky, and I'm still 4-Bit Friday.
How's Blue Sky treating you?
It's fine. People keep asking me that. It's just like Twitter was when I liked it, so I don't know.
Oh, damn.
I guess to some
that's
people,
that's good. Actually high praise.
Yeah, I like it.
I haven't liked Twitter in a long time.
Yeah.
And Jeff, if this is something that you want, where can people find you on the internet?
They can go to patreon.com/Jeff Gerstmann. I'm doing a podcast and a bunch of other stuff, or dopeassvideogames.com will get you to the same page. Someone registered that domain and that works as well. And I'm on Blue Sky as well, at jeffgerstmann.com. Blue Sky's fine. I'm following people and sometimes they post about video games. I'm following slightly different people than I would have followed on Twitter. And so it's been like really refreshing. And it's less techie than Mastodon.
Yeah.
And I like Mastodon for some very specific stuff. Like when I really want to deep dive on some wild shit, that is a good place for it. But for the kind of shitposty garbage that made Twitter fun, Blue Sky has the juice for that, I think.
Yeah, I'm doing my part to fill Mastodon with shitposts, but I can't do it by myself.
Yeah, I it's just, it doesn't, yeah. I feel bad. I feel like people are there writing technical papers or something. It just doesn't feel right for me to crap up Mastodon. I don't know.
You don't want to ruin it?
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
Same with co-host. I love co-host, but also everyone I follow is posting a lot of really smart stuff. And I don't always want to just come in there and be like, yes, here's pants pooping jokes. Waka waka. You know, just, like
waka waka.
You just follow dumber people.
I get. Yeah. I just need to find more idiots. But there are no idiots on co-host. Everyone on co-host is so smart. I'm the idiot on co-host.
Thanks so much for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Jim. This is the audio I append to every episode of Topic Lords. Congratulations to our newly anointed lords. This episode was edited by Esper Quinn, who can also edit your episode if you contact them on Twitter. If you'd like more people to hear the show, you can tell your friends about it, or rate and review us on whatever podcast service you use. You can add content to the Topic Bucket by emailing topicbucket@topiclords.com, and you can contribute to our Patreon at patreon.com/topiclords. Patrons get episodes a week early, and you get access to the Topic Lords Discord, where you can discuss topics with all the lords that hang out in there. See you next episode!